from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., you've heard of it, where I've learned that a hotel reservation, a confirmed hotel reservation, does not mean that something has actually been reserved, that is to say, a room for you to stay in for the night. But that's, you know, things are redefined in Washington all the time. And, ladies and gentlemen, in case you haven't heard,
you gotta be kidding me.
Mayor Ray Nagin has been reelected in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Get the asses moving to New Orleans.
Okay, sir, I will.
Excuse my French, everybody in America.
I have a little device called the mayor in your pocket, and I guess it's good for four more years. He was reelected narrowly, like you would be if somebody wasn't really running against you. And, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly here at the beginning of the, at the outset of the broadcast. Dateline Virginia Beach, Virginia. The Reverend Pat Robertson says God has told him that storms, and possibly a tsunami, will hit America's coastline this year. The founder of the Christian Broadcasting Network, don't you know, has told viewers of the 700 Club that his revelations came to him during a personal prayer retreat. Quote, if I heard the Lord write about 2006, the coasts of America will be lashed by storms. He said on May 8th, he added specifics later this week. Quote, there may well be something as bad as a tsunami in the Pacific Northwest, he said. You know that Robertson has come under intense criticism in recent months for suggesting that U.S. agents should assassinate Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, and that Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's stroke was divine retribution for Israel's pullout from the Gaza Strip. But now, Pat Robertson says, maybe a tsunami along the Pacific Northwest. We have a more specific forecast from the Reverend. Hello, Pat.
Thanks, Harry. Well, the good Lord tells me that the Southern California outlook is for late night and early morning low clouds and fog along the coast. God says it'll be clearing by mid-morning hours. The good Lord's looking for highs along the coastal areas in the high 60s to low 70s, but he says it's going to get up into the low 80s in the inland valleys, and that's the word of God. Right now, the Lord tells me that it's 71 degrees in Hollywood. And, Harry, we'll check back with the good Lord for the weather outlook for Chicago next hour.
Good deal.
Meanwhile, hello and welcome to the show. Thank you.
live in the Northeast? How can you live in the South? How can you build on the banks of a river when flood water pours from the mouth, from the mouth? Given all I wanted, only three generations off the boat. I've harvested and I've planted. I'm wearing my father's old coat.
Sounds fine. I suppose the means will turn up round nine. Bought a bunch of flowers just for her. She says the burden's on the receiver. I opened the door and you walked in. The scent of wild jasmine. The room seemed to freeze in time. My regular table will be just fine. Radiant and elegant you might be, but your concentration is so lightly. Both of your eyes reflecting the moon. Think you own the room. So what game shall we play today? How about the one where you don't get your way? Even if you do, that's okay. So what game shall we play today? How about the one where you don't get your way? Even if you do, that's okay. Take it up, reading the signs. It's turning out to be a real good time. Now who'd have thought that entertainment lies in the window of your discontent? Now, sit at the table face to face. Queen takes pawn, check or checkmate. I feel your foot brush against my leg. I'm not that easily led. You blur your eyes and you toss your hair. I have to say that it is kind of unfair. Now let me tell you, baby, now what's in store? You win the battle, but I'll win the war. So what game shall we play today? How about the one where you don't get your way? Even if you do, that's okay. So what game shall we play today? How about the one where you don't get your way?
Yeah.
Thank you. From the edge of nowhere, from Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, home of the no reservation reservation. Should I name the hotel? Why would I name the Hotel Rouge? Why would I do that? I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show, where your table is always reserved. I'm sorry, there's no room for you, but your table is reserved. And before we...
I fired, and there's Harry falling.
No, I'm not falling, Dick. You're really reliving the experience long after it's over, and I appreciate the fact that you are re-experiencing it, or experiencing anything at this point, but it's fine. I'm not falling. Everything's okay. Ladies and gentlemen, a story that I missed when it first came around, so I want to share it with you at this point in time. Dateline Warsaw, this is just basically how far show business spreads in our modern world. You know, because we think sometimes it's just America. No. We have succeeded in exporting the show business uber alles mystique, if it is a mystique, or a lack of mystique, to the entire planet. Dateline Warsaw, a former Nazi death camp, has canceled plans to host a production of the rock opera Jesus Christ Superstar, according to the director of the site's museum. Edward Balawajder, director of the State Museum at another place I'll mangle the pronunciation of, said he changed his mind about hosting a production of the musical after Polish newspapers reported the objections of Jewish leaders to a production of Jesus Christ Superstar at a former Nazi death camp, you see, ladies and gentlemen. Quote, "It was not a good idea. It did not take into consideration the relations between Christianity and Judaism," Balawajder told the AP. "I decided there will be no performance because we must stick to the message of the museum, which is truth, memory, reconciliation." Director Jacek Boniecki, director of the Lublin Musical Theater in Eastern Poland, said the intention of the production had been to present universal issues with no religious context. Name of the show again, Jesus Christ Superstar. Quote, "The monument is site of many international concerts, of prayers of many religions, and it is a neutral place," Boniecki said. Piotr Kad... Pronunciation guide, AP, please. The leader of Poland's Jewish community said he was very happy the performance would not take place. The death camp is Majdanek, one of a network of Nazi death camps in occupied Poland. Jesus Christ Superstar. You know, the big box Jesus? Jesus Christ Superstar tells the story of the last days of Jesus. It was criticized by some Christians as sacrilegious, while some Jewish groups complained it was anti-Semitic. So it's got to be good. Both groups hate it. The performance will take place in another open-air site, hopefully not the site of another former Nazi death camp. But you never know. One never knows, does one? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to attempt to read the trades for you. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And even though the music may be late in coming, it will be here. I feel assured of that. Here it is now. See? Don't scoff at me. I'm reading the trades for you. This is from Current, the trade magazine of public radio. Since I'm in public radio's nervous center in Washington, D.C., I thought I'd read this for you. By golly, I will. Radio's a missing element in HD radio's slow rollout. I'll read it for you. HD radio. How long is it going to be before HD becomes like the next digital? Hey, we got HD babes at the club tonight. I got HD knockers. HD radio is here, and perhaps the most fitting candidate for its theme song could be Pink Floyd's "Is There Anybody Out There?" says Current. Few consumers today are listening to digital radio. Not for a lack of programming or transmitters. Hundreds of public and commercial stations are broadcasting in what the electronics and radio industries call HD radio. They call it that because it has nothing to do with HD television. But you've heard of it. Among public radio stations receiving aid from your federal government, more than half of the transmitters have been converted or in the process. 18 of the several hundred are offering bonus programming. Otherwise, it's the same old wonderful stuff. Please send money. Yet their reach is limited due to the scarcity and high price tags of digital receivers. No, they're not doing that again. Consumers remain largely ignorant of HD radio and its promises of better sound and added content, currently being featured by 18 stations. Analysts predict it will be years before consumers come around. The slow rollout of receivers has hobbled campaigns to raise the awareness of HD. NPR announced in January last year it hoped to buy tens of thousands of receivers, please send money, and give them to stations, then had to scale back the campaign when the radios failed to materialize. It's better than radios dematerializing, I guess, but... Executives at NPR and at Ibiquity Digital Corporation, creator of HD Radio. By the way, if you want to know whether a station is broadcasting in HD and you have an AM radio, just tune a couple notches to the right or left of the station. And if you hear a lot of... they're broadcasting in HD. Quote, I think we all need to carefully calibrate our expectations with the reality that there are 700 to a million to a billion radios in the United States, all analog, says Mike Starling, NPR's chief technology officer. We need to do that now. Public adoption of HD will be a, quote, long, multi-year process, hinging on the availability of cheaper radios, he says. Some station managers are more pessimistic than that. Yes, they report frustrating first-time experiences with HD as both listeners and broadcasters, and question whether the technology will help them compete with podcasting, satellite radio, and other threats. Says Cleve Callison, general manager of a station in Oxford, Ohio, digital radio just has not had the kind of marketing that satellite radio had a couple of years ago. We have a lot of catching up to do. Executives and analysts frequently cite the chicken and egg conundrum of HD radio. Listeners are reluctant to buy new radios until new content is available. Broadcasters shy from investing in content until listeners have radios. Observers say manufacturers must roll out more radios to break the standoff. Clear Channel, Entercom, Infinity, and other major broadcasters in the commercial realm announced in December the HD Digital Radio Alliance, a coordinated educational effort aimed at listeners. They will devote advertising time worth more than $200 million to promoting HD radio with the tagline, "Are you deaf yet?" You think I'm kidding. I'm so not kidding. Are you deaf? D-E-F yet? That's old school slang. If Clear Channel is using it, you know it's not current. Quote, it's all about selling the radios now, says Robert Strubel, president of Ibiquity. We're in the position of marketing the radios if we want to get audience, says the VP for programming at a station in Orlando, Florida. That's a very different experience. Stations may have their work cut out for them. When salespeople at a local electronics megastore were asked about HD radio, they steered him toward XM and Sirius, two satellite networks that are arch competitors targeted by HD radio. NPR stations have been working on their own promotion plans, though they have been delayed by the scarcity of receivers. In a second phase of the campaign, stations may be able to buy receivers from manufacturers at wholesale, then sell them to listeners via their websites at retail. Please send money, keeping the proceeds as recognition for their promotional role. For now, those prices are just too high, according to many in public radio. Starling of NPR, somewhere along here, he expects receivers will sell for less than $200 before the end of the year. The lack of affordable radios or radios at any price is a huge problem, says analyst Laura Behrens of Gartner. Gardner projects just 9% of U.S. households will have digital radios by 2009. Even the radios now on the market have come with kinks. Some public radio broadcasters say they were disappointed by the Boston Acoustics radios they received through NPR earlier this year, especially when tuning in digital signals indoors. Well, nobody listens to the radio indoors, do they? That shouldn't be. The problem was the antenna shipped with the models, which proved too short for adequate reception. More troubling to the station managers is that the signals emanating from the new digital transmitters are weaker than expected. I said weaker than expected. I'm over here. The digital signals reached fell short of the analog signals, leaving at least half of the audience without digital coverage. Says one station executive, 2 years ago, we thought this would be a great thing for us. Speaking of HD radio, that's not clear at all now, he says. Thank God we're not making the same mistake we did with television. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there are more trades, and I think there's more music. Yeah, there is. From Advertising Age, the Bible of the advertising industry. Against the backdrop of the TV network's upfront presentations in New York this week, the Writers Guild of America made its own noise in the Apple to highlight its concerns about product integration's deleterious effect on the artistic integrity of television writing. Did I actually say those words? Yes, I did. Creators and showrunners of TV's top shows, including Neil Baer of Law & Order SVU, Mark Cherry of Desperate Housewives, Carol Mendelson of CSI, and John Wells of ER, expressed their support for the Guild's hopes to negotiate a formal agreement with the networks to regulate writers' participation in product integration deals. The Guild's president, Patrick Verone, explained the migration of product integration from reality TV to scripted series gravely concerns his membership. Quote, when it goes beyond putting a can of soup on the table, when it's putting a can of soup on the table and having the characters talk about the creamy goodness of the soup, or when their next door neighbor has to hear all the recipes, that's when it encroaches into our sector, he said. The writer's primary concern is that they will be forced to work a product into a storyline in a way that is not organic. They don't want to be compelled to have their characters use products that are inappropriate to their personalities or lifestyles. Mark Cherry spoke of how he was approached by a high-end car manufacturer who wanted one of his characters to drive a certain vehicle. Cherry explained that the audience had already seen his characters driving vehicles suited to them, and he didn't want to reshape his narrative to explain a change. He turned the car manufacturer down. Which he can do because he has a successful show. New programs are the most vulnerable to these negotiations, Verone of the Writers Guild says. They will be in a position where they can't say no. Verone emphasized that his membership is not against product integration. They just want to be part of the process. And inappropriate product integration will be obvious to the audience and turn away consumers, Verone of the Writers Guild said, adding, quote, Columbo doesn't drive a Maserati. You can't get the radios. Characters are using the wrong products. It's the digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen. A panorama brought into clearer focus when I read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
But we really didn't know until Sunday morning that Harry was probably going to be okay.
I am okay, thanks.
By the highway. highway where her man was lost. Look, look, look at those flowers. Look, look, remember them well. Look, look, look at those flowers. Every rose petal's got a tale to tell. Jody Brown was a hard-working family man. Made a good living with his own two hands. Started in drinking when they closed the mill. When a little left of center coming over the hill. Now his wife ties roses on a wooden cross at the place by the highway where her man was lost. Look, look, look at those flowers. Look, look, remember them well. Look, look, look at those flowers. Every rose petal's got a tale to tell. So tired, so many miles to go. I'm just trying to get home. So tired, so far out on this road. I'm just trying to get
This is Le Show.
We didn't know for sure what kind of shape Harry was in.
Well, we do now. He's good. And by he, I mean me. Ladies and gentlemen, buried leads this week. Two buried leads in one story. That's got to be some attentive news gathering. You know that on Wednesday, the new nominee, well, the nominee of the White House to... head the CIA to succeed Porter Goss, General Michael Hayden, had his hearing before the Senate. And there were a lot of different leads for that story. The two kind of shouted out to me, and one was sort of was half buried, and one was totally buried. So let's take them in order, shall we? Thank you. He told Congress, did Hayden, he told the Senate, actually, that he wasn't comfortable with the secret Pentagon unit that claimed Al-Qaeda had ties to Saddam Hussein in the lead-up to the Iraq War. Just a minor little quibble about that bad intel that was blamed on the CIA. Here's another brushback. Air Force General Michael Hayden said the tiny unit created by Defense Secretary, Assistant Defense Secretary, or Under Defense Secretary, Doug Feith, was so secretive he, Hayden, didn't know about its activities when he, Hayden, headed the super-secret National Security Agency in the run-up to the Iraq War. That's secret. That's pretty secret. It was the Office of Special Plans led by former Pentagon Policy Chief Doug Feith. That's right, Feith-based intelligence. I wasn't aware of a lot of activity going on, Hayden told the Senate Intelligence Committee. No, sir, I wasn't comfortable with Feith's Iraq analysis, said Democratic Senator Carl Levin of Michigan. You actually placed a disclaimer on NSA reporting about links between Saddam and al-Qaeda. Yes, sir, Hayden replied. Just the intelligence that, you know, was used to lead us into the Iraq War, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing big, nothing that would justify, you know, a lead. And then this one really bowled me over. Republican Senator Mike DeWine was questioning General Hayden on his putative new job at the CIA. There's very little doubt he's going to be confirmed. Quote, Republican Senator DeWine of Ohio, quote, first, do you agree that we can make still better use of non-official cover operations? Do you agree that we need to be more creative and risk-taking in how we construct and use non-official cover? And am I right to be concerned that non-official cover operations have not been given the resources and attention that they need to be given to be truly successful? Are you prepared to give NOC, non-official cover operations, the support and resources they need to truly succeed? That was the question. And I realized I had heard that phrase before, non-official cover. I don't study the intelligence world all that much, ladies and gentlemen. Why should I? It's not my business. But I'd heard that phrase before, and then I realized where it was used. That was the status derided as not really cover, not really secret, not really a problem if you expose it. That was the status enjoyed until recently by former CIA weapons proliferation operative Valerie Plame. She had non-official cover. So, the new director of the CIA is being tasked by a Republican senator with giving more resources, being more creative, more risk-taking, more support to people with non-official cover. Support like your name appears in Bob Novak's column. Two leads buried, no survivors. Ladies and gentlemen, you know that Rush Limbaugh has reached an agreement. This happened a few days ago with Florida officials, prosecutors. He will not be prosecuted. Limbaugh's lawyer says it's a settlement. There's no admission of anything. Although Limbaugh agreed to a set of restrictions on his activities, paid some money to the state, but that's just a settlement. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong happened. There will be no prosecution. He'll continue in treatment for, I guess it's 5 years. And interestingly enough, from that treatment center, we have received the following tape.
Now, from inside an undisclosed treatment facility, the most listened to drug addict in America, on a rush to recovery,
Rush Limbaugh.
Greetings, counselors and tough love administrators all across the fruited plain of my mind. With talent on loan from God and half my brain tied behind my back just to make it fair for the other half, which is still loaded to the flipping gills, I am your avatar of broadcast turpitude, Rush Limbaugh. I want to thank Roger Hitchcock for taking the reins of my radio broadcast for the next little while. But here in the abstinence and broadcasting building that is my own cerebral cortex, we're embarking on the third of an unknown number of hours in the Limbaugh Institute of Advanced Conservative Revisionism, because, my friends, cold turkey is something far worse than what you eat the day after Thanksgiving. This is a situation that I take full responsibility for, even though it was caused by one stupid housekeeper with a big mouth. And I acknowledge that I have often treated those addicted to or just using drugs with great contempt and lack of compassion, advocating that they should be arrested, tried, and jailed. But my friends, and I wonder at this point if you are, my friends, those weak, undisciplined adherents of a degenerate lifestyle which threatened the very fabric of a God-fearing community had one very dramatic shortfall in their characters. They weren't me. But now I'm not me either. I'm not a conventional air mattress. I'm totally adjustable. Environ-nutsos and feminazis, the homeless and the Democrats who would like nothing better than to have Saddam Hussein as their presidential candidate next year, I love you all. Now, even though I'm not on the air, this is pretty impressive technology, more impressive than the procedure that restored my hearing after it mysteriously disappeared with no connection to any overuse of prescription medication. We have a caller. I really don't know how this is working, but hello, you're on the AIB network.
Hey, Rush, it's Bill Clinton, longtime target, first-time caller.
President Clinton, I'm really not prepared for this. My mind's only on 3-second delay, so...
Don't worry, man, I'm not going to swear at you. I'm going to do something that's going to make you feel so much worse.
Mm-hmm. What's that, sir? Make me go on a date with Mrs. Clinton?
No, Rush. Mm. I'm going to feel your pain.
Oh, no.
And you're going to feel mine, because I'm going to play a saxophone solo over the telephone. Hold on.
Let's put this call on hold, and let me continue here with my exegesis of my position, because this is important. It's about the future of excellence, or the excellence of the future. And speaking of the future, my next book, I Told You I Was Right and I Was Wrong, is due out shortly after I am. I really should be working on it right now rather than engaging you, my friends of the brain cell audience, but I have always respected you and given you the benefit of your own thoughts, and now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this, they always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s, but that's what liberals do, and in my new book, I Told You I Was Writing, I'm a liberal too, because to tell you the truth, at the base of all this, ladies and gentlemen, has been a deep and abiding physical attraction to the late Bella Abzug. You can try her yourself in your own home for 30 days, risk-free. But this is what is gnawing away at the traditional values that hold this country together, my friends, and it is, in fact, my next book. I told you I was gnawing away at the traditional values that hold this country together. We've got another caller. And I want to pay tribute to the engineers here at the Betty Ford Institute for Advanced Nonlinear Studies for putting it through. Hello, you're on the AIB network on Open Line Friday.
Rush, it's John Ashcroft, and it's Thursday.
Sir, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the call, but it is my hallucination, and that kind of obviates the conventional calendar approach.
Rush, I know you have a lot of time to fill, but mm-hmm. I've got detainees to sort. I just wanted to call up and say God wants his talent back.
You know, Mr. General, I don't believe in coincidence, but I was just writing the other day in the Limbaugh Letter, the most consistently authoritative political newsletter in the history of the known universe, that I don't believe in coincidence. How about that?
Rush, this treatment stuff is the bunk. Why don't you just come over to the Justice Department and sing hymns with us every morning? Have you off the sauce in no time.
Well, Mr. General, thank you very much for the call. I think we're running out of time on the satellite. I am curious about one thing. How did you get this number?
I've been bugging Bill Clinton's calls.
John Ashcroft, ladies and gentlemen, taking the time to connect with the largest audience of time-released narcotic molecules in the history of broadcast access. We're just beginning this excursion into my new book, I Told You I Was White, but we got some bills to pay and some nausea to deal with, and then we will be back with more of the Rush Limbaugh program, so I urge you not to go away, and if you do, please take me with you.
made a note of it. Did you write it on your hand? Put a name on it to help you understand. What do you see? Future's holiday out for me. Just let me know where we go after the fall. Like the sound of it, gonna hang it on your wall. Turn and run with it for the sake of one and all. Nobody knows. What do you see? The future's holiday out for me. Just let me know where to go, where you go after the fall.
Ladies and gentlemen, news of the new Middle East. Yeah, it's exciting what's going on over there. The heaviest outbreak of fighting in years this week underscored a violent shift in Afghanistan as NATO troops gird for an expanded mission there, analysts told the Associated Press. Afghan officials reported nearly 200 dead on all sides by Friday, 2 days of fierce fighting at different sites in eastern and southern Afghanistan. The violence may be only a taste of what is in store for NATO troops that are taking over some of the responsibility for fighting, bringing together a new Middle East. Another source, Asia Times Online, reports that a new commander has been selected by the Taliban. Remember them? The Pentagon has secretly shipped tens of thousands of small arms from Bosnia to Iraq in the last 2 years, using a web of private companies, at least one of which is a noted arms smuggler blacklisted by Washington and the UN. This, according to The Guardian newspaper, quoting a report by Amnesty International. The U.S. arranged for the delivery of at least 200,000 Kalashnikov machine guns from Bosnia to Iraq in the last 2 years. The weaponry was said to be for arming the Iraqi military. There's no evidence the guns actually reached their intended recipients. Senior Western officials in the Balkans fear that some of the guns may have fallen into the wrong hands. What about Egypt? They must be getting the whiff of democracy from their neighbor Iraq. An appeals court on Thursday upheld the fraud conviction of Ayman Nour, the candidate who dared to challenge President Hosni Mubarak and his 25 years of one-man rule in elections last year. The fiery lawyer has been consigned to 5 years in prison. He was convicted in December of forging documents needed to legalize his party, the Tomorrow Party, wasn't that Tom Snyder's old party? Even though a government commission had approved the papers a year and a half ago, and a witness at his trial said he was tortured into testifying against Nour. It's the whiff of democracy. U.S. and coalition forces cannot yet be withdrawn from even Iraq's most stable regions, despite progress made in building up Iraqi security forces. That, according to the head of the U.S. military, General Peter Pace. He was asked whether coalition forces could withdraw within the next 3 months from any of 14 Iraqi provinces that he had described as calm and stable. "No, sir," he said. Getting a new definition to calm and stable, as well as your room is reserved. And, reports the Independent from London, across central Iraq there's an exodus of people fleeing for their lives as sectarian assassins and death squads hunt them down. Iraq is disintegrating as ethnic cleansing takes hold on a massive scale. The state of Iraq now resembles Bosnia at the height of the fighting in the 1990s. So why shouldn't they be getting some Bosnian weapons? The new Middle East, ladies and gentlemen. Gotta be a thrill. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Mike Wallace is sorry. Yes, he is. Among the more surprising admissions from an interview he conducts with his CBS 60 Minutes colleagues is this. Under some prodding from fellow correspondent Leslie Stahl, Wallace admits he was rough on Barbara Streisand. Quote, "That was mean. It was mean. Oh, sorry, that was mean. That was mean," a stern Stahl charges. "Yes, it was rough," Wallace replies. "But Streisand needed to have control." In the end, a repentant Wallace makes a sincere apology to Streisand on 60 Minutes. The disgraced boss of the Australian Wheat Board, Andrew Lindbergh, made a groveling apology over the oil-for-food scandal that has engulfed his agency in a written letter last December that appears to contradict evidence he gave to the official inquiry into the scandal. In his December, quote, "draft statement of contrition," unquote, Lindbergh confessed that when the wheat exporter paid nearly $290 million in kickbacks to Saddam Hussein's regime, he wrote, quote, "The board accepts that in paying money for inland transportation and after-sale service, it paid money to the Iraqi government in contravention of the UN sanctions. Even though there were warning signs to some employees that this may have been occurring, AWB did not challenge these payments and was not alert to the potential consequences of making these payments. We simply should have done better, and I'm deeply sorry we didn't." In his sworn testimony later to a hearing, he denied that he did. Three Catholic priests at the center of a controversy after they co-celebrated Mass with a Church of Ireland minister have apologized for their actions. Australian Prime Minister John Howard has apologized to the family of Private Jake Kovco. Howard declared the latest mess unacceptable after the military lost the draft report into an investigation into the bungled return of the soldier's body. That's right, they brought back the wrong body, lost his papers, then investigated the bungle, and lost the papers about the investigation. A high school teacher in St. Joseph, Missouri, has apologized for asking students to write about who they would kill and how they would do it. Officials said he would likely keep his job. The BBC has apologized to its viewers for a studio mix-up that resulted in a man mistakenly appearing on live television as Guy Cuny, an expert on internet music downloads. In fact, the man was Guy Goma, a Congolese man applying for a job. New Zealand police have apologized to a Christchurch man after a senior official at a careers expo told him his scarf was, quote, "a bit too gay." The U.S. government and the U.S. Federal Aviation Authority expressed a deep apology for not allowing a New York flight of Bangladesh Airlines to land at JFK Airport for alleged security reasons. And those, ladies and gentlemen, oh, wait, there's one more. This, an excerpt from a report on National Public Radio about the flooding in New Orleans. Correspondent talking to a representative of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
You hear people who are really pissed at the Corps. What do you say to those people?
I would say that we're sorry for what happened and for their loss. Their property and those that lost loved ones, but that we are doing everything within our power, our authority, and our funding limits that Congress gives us to build them a much better system. Colonel.
Well, he's very sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Don't sue him. He's sorry. A federal judge this week. Oh, so those are the apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And speaking of the Army Corps, my favorite columnist in the New Orleans newspaper, the Times-Picayune, says, why isn't the Corps falling all over itself in a prostrate mea culpa about its criminal failure and its concomitant destruction of our city and horribly gruesome death of our people? Answer, there is no accountability in public life. On a related matter, a federal judge this week dismissed a lawsuit brought by a man who says he was an innocent victim of the U.S. government's program transferring terrorism suspects secretly to other countries for detention and interrogation. The extraordinary rendition. The judge did not say that the man had been treated unfairly, did not deny the man may have been treated unfairly, since he was innocent and rendered to a country where he alleges he was tortured, but says the court must yield to the national interest in preserving state secrets. But he said if the man's account was true, he suffered injuries as a result of our country's mistakes and deserves a remedy. He said only the legislative or executive branches could provide such a remedy, presumably in the form of compensation or apology. Apparently there is no accountability, or in the words of the Breech Boys, we'll be right back.
goddamn crisis in the history of this country.
All right, thank you, Mayor. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude. With the mayor in my pocket, that's concluding this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Around the world via the internet at two locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, whenever you want it. On channel 136, it's Sirius Satellite Radio, available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like me being able to say three W's in a row if you'd be able to join me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks and to Arjun Hutchins at NPR here in Washington for making today's show so delightful to do. Le Show playlist available at harryshearer.com. Assured that a space is reserved for you here next week, and by reserved I mean there's no space. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. I'll talk to you next week from New Orleans.